This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app and you can also get reward points delivered too. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Jetson's there, Billy Ted, the goal Chris Billy Huddersfield Town. The most famous goal of Chris Billy's life.
Is this the moment for Lee Fowler? It is. Take your place in Division 2, Huddersfield Town.
Thank you.
Champion Steve Simonson's boots now. He's missed. Steve Simonson clears the frame of the goal and collapses in a heap of tears. Huddersfield Town are promoted.
Mustafa Schindler has a chance to write his name in Huddersfield Town legend. And he takes that chance!
Guten Tag and welcome to a special episode of the Andy Takes That Chance podcast. On Thursday, the 15th of February, Huddersfield Town appointed their new manager, Andre Breitenreiter. Who is he? And more importantly, is he any good? Myself, Matt Shaw, and the recently retired from five-a-side Guardian writer, Bredel Weiss Frost, are here to do a deep dive on the new man and who we can hope take us on another crazy German roller coaster. How are we doing, Brady?
I'm good. Danke for having me, if I'm going to carry on the German now.
That's it. We're all German now. Right. So very briefly on Mr. Breitenreiter, his start of his coaching career. So where did it all begin? So born in Langenhagen, Breitenreiter had a decent football career, I think. Played for the German under-21s and football clubs like Hannover 96, Wolfsburg and Hamburg before starting his non-playing career in 2009, where he scouted for Kaiserslautern. Before landing the job as head coach of TSV Hevelse in 2011. They played in the North Regional League, which is similar to the fourth tier of England. They won the Saxony Cup in 2012 before it led them to their highest ever finish of second in 2013. That was enough to attract the attention of Paderborn. At Hevelse, he had a 47.67% win ratio, which Tim Sherwood would even be proud of there, Brady. At Paderborn, he won promotion to the Bundesliga for the first time in the club's history in 2013-14. His first season there, then after four games, they were top of the Bundesliga, very similar to us under David Wagner, where he took us to the Premier League and we were top after three games. Since then, unfortunately, Paderborn were relegated the next season, but the job was impressive enough that Breitenreiter was offered the head coach job at Schalke for the 2015-16 season. At Schalke, improved their position from 6th to 5th, but it was deemed as not quite successful enough, and he was sacked for the first time in his career, despite a 45% win ratio and European qualification. So from here, he went to Hannover. And the story is picked up here where, Brady, you speak to Toby from the Hannover podcast, Vorfort's Nach Weit 96.
Hi, Toby. Thanks so much for taking the time to speak to us and also giving us your answers in not your native language. It's very impressive and a lot better than if I had to speak German. So I suppose the first question we're going to ask you is about Andre Breitenreiter and what kind of coach he is and what Town fans can expect.
Thanks to Brady for having me, and hello to all of the Huddersfield Town supporters. My name is Toby, and I'm host of the Hannover 96 podcast in Germany. First of all, congratulations to your new coach. André Breitenreiter is a very, very interesting manager, and I think you will have a lot of success with him. But why? You're getting, as we call in German, a tactic fuchs. That means that he is really a good tactical expert, and one of his best things is that he can put all the players on positions where they are the best. And he looks at the next opponents and he really decides, because of the opponent, who is playing and where the player is playing. So this is what we call in German a tactic fuchs.
It's good to hear, and I appreciate it's a few years ago, but having seen him during his time at Hannover, what would you say his strengths and weaknesses are as a coach?
He's very good at analyzing opponents. He's very into video studies and teaches his players to react on the opponent and to act in advance. That means he's not just looking to react and how he can win the next game, but he's also looking of the strengths of the players you have to decide where they are the best, as I said before. And so it's possible that you will not see 11 players, the same 11 players in every match, but you will see the 11 best players for the next opponent. This is very good of André Breitenreiter. However, well, you have many pros, you also have cons. And one of the cons is that André is not very used to work with stars. So this is nothing he really can handle, you know. So what he can do is, you know, form a team, like new players, improve them, make them better. But he's not really used to having stars and setting them in the best positions and handle with them. This is one of the problems he had at Hoffenheim, for example. And his problem is also that he will have quick effort. You will see an improvement just at the first match already. But it's not very easy for him to like keep this improvement alive and to improve them even more.
And you talked about how he is a bit of a tactics fucks, as you said. How did he set up his team at Hannover, and what was his time like at the club?
André Breitenreiter came to Hannover during the season. Like, we were on the fourth place, and our goal was to go up to the Bundesliga. And so his job was to make that sure, make that clear, and to promote with Hannover. He did that, so he did a good job, and we made it into Bundesliga. But as I said before, it was harder for him to keep this spirit alive. We had a good season, a good first season in the Bundesliga, but a very, very bad season too in Bundesliga. Though it's always harder to have success in the second season. And that was his problem. His problem was that the second season was too bad. And that was the reason why he had to leave. Though André Breitenreiter is some like club idol. He was youth player for Hannover. He won the DFB Pokal, the German Cup, in 1992. And he was like very, very popular with his fans, and he was like coming home when he became our manager. But it was his problem the second season to keep up the level, and that was the reason why he had to leave Hannover during the second season in the Bundesliga.
And you've touched on it a bit in your previous answer, but just curious to know what his management style was like during his time at Hannover.
As I said before, his management style was like to be into video studies, to look at the players, the best positions they have, and not to have the 11 players who start in every game. So it's not like he had a starting 11 and they were playing all the time, but he changed a lot. And he tried to, we say in German, spiegeln the opponent. So like he looked at the opponent and tried to have the best tactic to get the points. So that was his management style. Not so much into the real young people, so youth player, it wasn't so easy for them, but what he did is he improved many, many players and made them better. But as I said before, in the second season, he had his problems, his issues, and we had a new forward, and he didn't get along with him, and so that was the problem. As I said before, he cannot handle stars that good.
No, thank you. Really appreciate that. I suppose to ask you, really, what do you make of his appointment at Huddersfield Town? Because it was a little bit of a surprise.
Well, I think it's interesting that he signed at Huddersfield Town. André Breitenreiter always waited for a job in the Bundesliga, as far as I heard. So he had some offers from Croatia, I think from the Croatian national team, and from other countries, but he always said no because he waited for an appointment in the Bundesliga. So it's very interesting that he makes the way to Huddersfield Town and to sign in a not Premier League club. That's very, very surprising for me. But we know German managers in England. Daniel Stendl come to my mind, Hannover 96 player and coach, and his time at Barnsley. And I think it's very, very surprising that André Breitenreiter signed at Huddersfield Town. But I think it's a good decision for you. So congratulations to André Breitenreiter again, and I hope you will have a successful time. Greetings from Germany and all the best from Tobi, host of the Hannover 96 podcast, Vorwärts nach weit.
No, thank you, Tobi. It's really interesting to hear about André Breitenreiter's time at Hannover. And I'm sure the listeners were really interested to hear that as well. Thank you so much and best of luck to Hannover for the rest of the season.
Really, that smooth caramel voice there from Tobi. Very, very good. I think you dropped your stripping name in there, didn't you? The Texas Fox halfway through that.
Yeah.
Really interesting interview. There's a lot of similarities there. I know people are going to make this leap every time without fail with David Wagner, aren't they? But there are sort of like similar things which he said there, which just reminded me of the great man himself, you know, how not particularly great at working with stars, which was interesting. And he's better at sort of forming a unit and a hard work inside and getting everybody to pull in one direction and creating a team spirit and ethic. And that kind of reminded me of David Wagner there. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I think the more you kind of read up about him, those comparisons, you know, there is a lot of similarities between him and Wagner. I think what you know, again, talking about the kind of immediate impact they had, I think that's really positive where we are in the circumstances with battling relegation. And I just, you know, listening to what Tobi, I mean, I could listen to what Tobi says about anything. I think he has a wonderful voice. Yeah, it's just, I think it ticks a lot of boxes. You know, I think that's really encouraging to see, and we'll kind of come on to what we think. But, you know, getting more and more intrigued. I feel very different about this to perhaps when we did our Darren Moore deep dive not too long ago.
You'll remember I was very, very sceptical of Darren Moore in that deep dive. I'm feeling less sceptical so far after Toby's comments. But after Tobi, Brady, you've been a busy boy. You then went away and you spoke to Craig King. And Craig King is an expert on Swiss football. And here is what the conversation was between the two of you.
Hi, Craig. Thanks so much for taking the time to speak to us. So, Huddersfield have a new manager, André Breitenreiter. Can you tell us what type of manager Huddersfield Town are getting with the German?
I think this is quite an exciting appointment for Huddersfield because this is a manager that kind of thrives on these situations where he comes into a club that isn't really having the best time. You know, he went into Zurich who hadn't had a great season before he arrived, and he took Paderborn to the Bundesliga. They weren't really a known team. It was their first ever promotion to the top flight in Germany. So I think this is the kind of team where he can come in and make his mark and really improve everything around the club. I'm not really sure what Huddersfield's aims are in terms of the Championship, and I know they're kind of struggling for form at the moment and near the bottom of the table in a relegation battle. But I don't know if maybe long-term promotion back to the Premier League is a realistic target. But regardless of whether that is or not, he's definitely a quality manager for me that can manage in a top flight like the Bundesliga. So I do think it's a good appointment for Huddersfield, whether they're in the Championship. He's someone that's a big believer in attack-minded football, being disciplined. And I think at this moment, when Huddersfield are in this position where they're struggling near the bottom of the table, it may be exactly what they need.
Yeah, Huddersfield are certainly struggling at the bottom of the table at the moment, although picked up recently. With that in mind, what would you say Andre Brighton Reitner's strengths and weaknesses are as a coach?
I really do believe that his biggest strength during his time in Switzerland was being able to take a team that was struggling. We know Zurich weren't in a great situation when he took over at the end of that season, and was the start of the new season, and he was able to transform them into something totally different. He improved a team of players that had underwhelmed in the previous season. He really played to their strengths. He got them playing exciting football that was kind of a world away from what they'd been playing before. He brought a real team spirit, unity, belief back into the club, back into the fan base. And as I mentioned, it's a team that's not really enjoyed the best of times over the last 14 years or so. They've won a few cups, they've played in Europe as a result of that. They've qualified for European football in the league, but there's not really been a lot of moments to enjoy apart from that. So to bring the togetherness that he did in that 2021-22 season, it was pretty spectacular to see. The attendances were higher, and there was just a real feel-good factor about the club, and the team spirit was the most apparent part of that for me. I think, as I said, there was a real togetherness there that hadn't really been seen in Zurich for quite a long time, in my opinion. As for weaknesses, it sounds silly to say, but I don't really have any that stand out, because he changed that team so much that there wasn't really any weak points to it. Of course, it wasn't perfect, you know, and they weren't unbeaten, they dropped points here and there, but they started so well and they never really looked back. They won the title easily in the end. After the winter break and the turn of the year, they were pretty much unstoppable, and it was clear at that point that they were going to win the title, that no one else could come close to them. So there wasn't really any glaring weaknesses for me. I don't recall anything that stood out as something that could be exploited by other teams, or was exploited by other teams often. So yeah, there is no doubt there will be weaknesses in his managerial ability, but they weren't really evident in Zurich, maybe during his time at Hoffenheim or elsewhere, but in Zurich there wasn't much that I can really pinpoint.
No, that's really interesting. Thanks, Craig. So what was his time like at FC Zurich then, and how did he set the team up?
I touched on it a little bit in previous answers, but I can't really say enough good things about the work that he did in Zurich. I think it's important to mention that he was helped to some extent by FC Basel being inconsistent for the last 5 or 6 years since their last title win, but and also Young Boys having what was their worst season in a long time. They've lost that title to Zurich that year, but when you look back over the last 5-6 years, the domination that they've had, they really don't have seasons like they did then. That was a real blip for them. But Zurich took advantage of that, and that's something that really should be admired from the manager and the team. They finished 8th the previous season with just 43 points. They avoided the relegation playoff by just 5 points. And then from there, with pretty much the same team, very few signings, they then stepped up so much the following season to win the title. And there's not many scenarios I can really think of where that happens very often, that a team can be so poor the previous season and be nowhere near, actually really quite close to the relegation fight and then go on to win the title. I think the only one that springs to mind is maybe Leicester, but obviously that's on a totally different scale. But Andre Breitenreiter, he did take the team and make them more disciplined. Crucially, he made them stronger defensively. He usually set up in a 3-1-4-2 formation. Usman Dumbia, who again had been at the club but didn't really show anything spectacular in his time, became such a key player just in front of the defence. And they were really a strong unit defensively. They'd conceded 58 goals in that previous season that I mentioned. That was just 5 less than those that were in the relegation spots. And then they conceded 46 in the title winning season, which was the second best in the league. Only FC Basel had bettered that. So there was a real significant improvement in that. And then alongside that structure that they had defensively, they were one of the best counter-attacking teams. They scored 78 goals. 20 of those goals came from Hassan Sissi, who, again, a player that I think a few people and myself had written off. Didn't really think he had the tools to be a consistent goal scorer, but he scored 20 goals, was a top scorer, 11 assists, and again, he was another player that was improved massively by the management and a really key part of why they won the title. I think if you'd said to me in that season before that he would score 20 goals, have 11 assists and help Zurich win the title, I would have been very, very surprised at it. So yeah, that transformation in itself, not even considering the rest of the team or the fact that they won the title, is something remarkable. But yeah, they started that season with 4 wins in a row. That was the first time since 2006. They won 11 of 17 for the first time since 2009. And I mentioned team spirit and that determination that they had. 16 of the 46 points by February had came from losing positions, which, again, they never really gave up in any game and were always in with a shout. And I think the manager has a huge part to play in that, because I think especially in the season prior, they would have had several games where they fell behind and weren't able to recover. And then in that title winning season, they were consistently able to recover points and pick up points and go on runs of form that really made their lead unassailable in the end and made their status as champions-elect kind of set from January onwards.
Yeah, and you touched on it previously there, but obviously he won the title during his time in Switzerland. And you've mentioned a little bit, but how does that rank as an achievement in the context of FC Zurich as a team?
I think it was a really massive achievement. Like I mentioned, he took a squad of players that had looked pretty average at best and transformed them from 8th position in the league to title winners in one season. And we mentioned the form of Basel and the dip that Young Boys experienced after winning the title the previous season. And that should be taken into consideration, but also it's factual that Zurich were much more improved than the 5 other teams that they finished behind, so that in itself should be respected. And as much as Zurich have such a rich history in Europe and Swiss football, they've won a lot of league titles, they were playing in the second tier of Swiss football as recently as the 2016-17 season. They only spent one season there, but again, it wasn't so long ago that was the case. They hadn't finished higher than 4th in the Super League since 2015, so there had been a real malaise at the club. Other than those cup wins and some nice moments in Europe, they'd not really had a lot to celebrate. And again, they hadn't won a title since 2009. A couple of seasons later, they finished 1 or 2 points behind Basel, and then since then, they've not really came close again. So to bring that back to the city in such with such style and to do it so convincingly was such a massive achievement. And also, of course, when you consider that their bitter rivals, Grasshoppers, haven't won a title since 2003, that's also quite sweet to bring that title back to Zurich again. And of course, the title was unexpected in itself. I don't think anyone expected Zurich to go out and win that title. I think Young Boys were the favourites as always. And even if you were to tell people that Young Boys weren't going to win it that year, I'm not so sure Zurich would have been close to the top of that list. And of course, it's a great thing for Zurich as well, reputation-wise. I think they're one of those teams that are in the public consciousness of a football fan when it comes to Swiss football. When you ask anyone to name Swiss football teams, I think Basel and Young Boys will be the ones at the top of the list and then quickly followed by Zurich. So for them to really get success again is just a massive thing. And the whole coaching staff, the team, Andre Breitenreiter, the players deserve every credit for that achievement.
Sounds really exciting. I mean, we've seen some of the videos of him celebrating the title win. So seems like a bit of a character. Can you tell us a little bit about his personality?
I don't know much about his character personally, just what I touched on before in terms of his philosophy in football, his desire to be disciplined, play good attacking football, be a motivator in the dressing room. And from my impressions in Switzerland, while he was only here for that brief period of one season, he was hungry to improve and did improve Zurich so much. So I think there's a lot of really positive traits in there that can only help any team that he joins, to be quite honest.
Excellent. I mean, it's the obvious question, really, and I suppose it's hard to say, but how do you think he will adapt to English football? I suppose that's the big question mark from town fans.
Admittedly, I don't watch a lot of the Championship, but I think everyone knows it's a really ridiculously difficult league at times. But I'm very interested to see how he adapts, if he can bring that style to Huddersfield. Then I really have no doubt he can lead them to safety. He should be able to bring in an improvement to the players that are there, to keep them safe, and then if he can keep them safe, then build on that in the seasons to come. I don't know if it'll be as quite a quick fix as what he was able to do in Zurich, and I'm also not sure what the expectations of the fans are generally, but I think if there's a degree of patience, although I understand that there can only be so much patience when they're in a relegation battle, but I think if there is that and he's given that chance to really make his mark on the team, then I think he can be a success with the right tools. But again, there's only really been a brief sample from his time at Zurich. He had a really good season at the club, and of course he had success before with Paderborn, but then it's went wrong afterwards with Hoffenheim. So it's hard to say what exactly will make it work or make it not work, but there's every chance that he can come in and steady the ship at Huddersfield like he did Zurich and put the building blocks in to make them a successful team going forward.
Let's certainly hope so. But Craig, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us and getting your thoughts on his time during Zurich. We really appreciate it.
Okay, Brady, another one full of positives for Andre Breitenreiter. Things there that I've picked up, he likes to sort of swap the team around, attack-minded football. There was like shades of Neil Warnock there, wasn't it? Where he's like, he likes attack-minded football with discipline. Be attacking, but make sure you're effing disciplined. That was very good. I liked that. Again, brought the team spirit and belief back to the club and fan base. It cost David Wagner his job, didn't he? Scandalous behaviour, Andre. But yeah, Young Boys were absolutely pasting the Swiss league, weren't they, until David Wagner went to Young Boys, and they were second, weren't they, when he lost his job because he couldn't keep up with Andre Breitenreiter's FC Zurich, a team that were avoiding relegation, he said, the year before, and turned them into a team that won the league by quite a bit. And one thing I will say about David Wagner at Young Boys is Young Boys were worse when he left, so there you go. Never go for the king when I'm around. Excellent. This is where he brought in that 3-1-4-2 system, didn't he, Brady, which seems very interesting, very fast-paced, counter-attacking system. And it's starting to, the excitement's building here, isn't it? All the way through the previous deep dive, there was a sort of a tone of maybe skepticism, let's say. But this, the excitement's building up now, isn't it? And we're starting to feel a little bit giddy.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you look at his career, this is his like managerial spell that I think really stands out. And what's really encouraging to hear from Craig is, like you say, like it's a team that's maybe unfancied, that doesn't have as big resources as some of the other teams in the division. And yeah, it all sounds really good, doesn't it? I think it's, you know, even although we're not like we're not Stephen Chicken and David Hartrick investing neutrals, we are fans, but we try and temper how we feel sometimes. I think it's hard to not get excited when you hear stuff like that. It's just really encouraging. And, you know, what is the point of us all following and listening to football podcasts and following Huddersfield Town if we can't get excited about this? I think Craig really thinks it's a coup, which is really good to hear, because, again, given we talked about this before we were recording, but given how this is the second season in a row, we've already gone on to a third manager of the season, it does feel like maybe we can't really be choosers. We might have to be beggars. But, you know, this is very left field, but it feels very exciting. It feels very calculated. And I suppose what I wanted to ask you, Matt, was, and I know Killer touched on this in the Hull City review, but if you look at it on paper, it's probably the most, you know, experienced, like probably the best appointment Town have made on paper. I'm just curious to see if you agree with that kind of rhetoric.
Yeah, I mean, you look at what he's done, is that the job he did at Paderborn was pretty phenomenal, wasn't it? It's all sort of, it's very much lightning in a bottle stuff so far, isn't it? Which was what David Wagner was like with us. I keep going back to that all the time, but he sort of seems to last sort of 18 months and everything. It just seems to go in and it's like a whirlwind and then it fizzles out. Why that is, I'm not entirely sure, but he's got two promotions, Paderborn and Hanover, isn't it? I'll just read in my notes there, and if I've spelled it wrong, Paderborn and Hanover. So he's got two promotions from a second tier to the top tier. I mean, the championship's probably not too dissimilar, I don't think, to the second tier of the Bundesliga. Maybe slightly stronger because there's more teams in there that can do damage. But it points well, and he's gone in there and Hanover, he got them promoted straight away, didn't he? Because he went in sort of midway through the season. It is exciting. I think the only other CV that kind of stacks up to it is Neil Warnock, but Neil Warnock was 75 when we appointed, or 74 when we appointed him. So his CV was obviously going to be fairly good with him still managing that. So, you know, Neil Warnock's promotions stacks up against anyone in world football almost, doesn't it? But aside from that, Andrew Breitenreiter is more experienced than David Wagner was when we appointed him. He's a lot more experienced than Jan Sievert was, Carlos Corberan, etc. So it's not the same sort of appointment where we've plucked somebody out of B team football or youth football. This is a guy who's done things, he's won things, and he's had a few failures as well. Even though one of his failures looks on paper like an improvement at Schalke. So and we all saw what happened at Schalke once David Wagner went there and everything was going a bit crazy. So it's very interesting. We have not heard one negative thing so far, Brady, about Andre Breitenreiter. The last person you spoke to about this, mostly about the job he did at Hoffenheim, was a German football expert called Mark Meadows. And Mark is giving us his overall view on Andre Breitenreiter.
Hi there. I'm very surprised for him, given the situation that you're in and his lack of experience in England. It's not the sort of person you'd expect them to bring in towards the end of a season. It's very experimental. I've never been particularly impressed with him. Yes, he finished second in the German second division 2014 with Paderborn to get them up. Then he left for Schalke. Everyone who's been at Schalke has failed in the last few years, so that's not a huge block on his copybook. But Hanover, it all went stale quite quickly. Yes, he had success at Zurich, but you know the Swiss league is not really competitive, and if you're half a good coach, you can do well in Switzerland. And then he came back to Hoffenheim. This was sort of his big hope, going back to Germany again and kind of rehabilitating his reputation after flopping at Schalke and Hanover. And he started well, playing reasonably bright football. He doesn't really have any set tactics or anything like that. He kind of fits to what the squad he inherits has. But the recurring theme is things going stale reasonably quickly. But maybe Huddersfield, or obviously have big links with Germany, having appointed Wagner and Sievert who incidentally just got sacked by Mainz, they might look at that and thought, well, he has an immediate impact, maybe. He's just basically a nice guy, so players naturally like him. And he's not a screamer. And maybe Huddersfield think they'll get a response through that. And if that keeps you up, then that's worthwhile. But then long term, it's never really worked anywhere. But he's sort of known for exceeding expectations. That's certainly what he did with Paderborn. And in a sense with Zurich, maybe being a bit harsh earlier, you know, it was I think the first time they'd won the league for quite a few years since 2009. And they won the league very easily and kind of destroyed young boys who'd been the big rivals at that time. And he scored a lot of goals with Zurich. I think it was, just looking here, 78 goals in 36 games. But he didn't score a lot of goals with his sides otherwise. I mean, he obviously had Andrej Kramaric at Hoffenheim. And the big joke in German football is, well, if Kramaric doesn't score or isn't on form, then Hoffenheim don't score and aren't on form. And that was a little bit his problem towards the end. Again, as I say, I'm very surprised. I don't know how his English is. He would have obviously have spoken German while he was coaching in Zurich. It's the German-speaking bit of Switzerland. And, yeah, you can say he's attacking, given what he achieved at Zurich with all those goals. And he kind of doesn't play with two holding midfielders generally, but maybe at some of the clubs he's been at, he should have done. And sure, you know, everyone's into gegenpressing, and that's certainly what Paderborn did. But with a side that's struggling, where you need to shut up shop first and then look to press higher up the field, it could be dangerous. So, you know, cross my fingers for you. Got a good friend of mine who's a Huddersfield fan. But I would be slightly alarmed. He always looks very smart, even when he's wearing tracksuits. I always thought, you know, when he wears a suit, looks smart. But even when he's wearing, you know, the normal clobber, he looks a smart chap. But I really don't understand why you've gone for him. I know the German link with Huddersfield, but I'm afraid this is going to be more, may end up more being like Sievert than like Wagner. If you need anything else, then let me know. Cheers.
He's shit, but he dresses nice, is pretty much the message from Mark there. So we've had our giddiness tempered slightly by Mark, who's a German football expert. I don't really get the Sievert reference in comparison. I know Mark's technically a lot more learned, shall we say, than myself in German football. But I mean, Jan Sievert failed at Rot-Weiss Essen before doing okay at Dortmund, but he didn't do what David Wagner did and got them promoted, and then failed at Town miserably, and then failed at Mainz very quickly. Jan Sievert's been more of a bit of a disaster, hasn't he, really? But Brighton Reiter's got two promotions on his CV and a league title in Switzerland, so it's very different. I mean, it doesn't do you any harm, does it, Brady, to sort of temper your expectations a bit and not get too swept away. But, I mean, the way that he described how they play, you know, the style of play is very similar to how John Worthington's had us playing anyway, isn't it? Or by where it sounds. So maybe we're a little bit more geared up for Andre Breitenreiter than maybe Mark expects.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, obviously, speaking to Toby, I was like, oh, yeah, this feels quite good. He seems to really like him. Speaking to Craig, you're like, oh, yeah. And then speaking to Mark, you're like, oh, Okay. And I suppose that's the thing, isn't it? Like you say, it's the main question is, will he adapt to English football? That's not to be all, this is our game kind of thing. But, you know, I suppose the positive is there. He has been in Switzerland, he has been in Germany, you know, he's shown he can do it in different countries. And you, like you say, with John Worthington and how we've lined up, I think Stephen Chicken made the point, it's kind of how Worthington's had us kind of off the ball is similar to how Brighton Rat likes to set up his teams in general, although he's quite flexible tactically. Look, I think we kind of touched on it, but any appointment at this stage of the season, given the context of Huddersfield, is going to have some question marks around it. There's no getting away from that. It's just, I think, like you say, maybe it's a, you know, we're not experts on German football like Mark. All I would say, though, is I think the positives you can take, and this is from chatting to everyone we've spoken to, he does seem to get a tune out of his squad, and they seem quite quickly. And I think particularly how this is kind of an appointment for this season, but also looking ahead, I think that's really positive for Town. And, you know, we don't know the conversations he's had with Kevin Nagel, but I can't imagine he took the job without some promises in the summer. And as we've kind of touched on the pod, that, you know, there is the need for a rebuild with Town, I think. So, yeah, look, like it's a shame to kind of end on that one, I suppose. But it's I think there's plenty of positives you can take. I suppose it's the question, you know, are you a glass half full, glass half empty? I think there's loads of things you can look at that are positive. There's some things that are questionable, but, you know, for the situation right now, I would argue, I don't think Huddersfield could have done a better job really in getting Andre Brighton right.
Yeah, I'm going to be excited as well. So the press conference and his first interview is due to come out very shortly. And what we'll do is we'll take a listen to that and then report back the general feel and the vibe that we get from that. Because I feel I've always someone who finds that the vibe around the place is very important. You know, the buy-in, the whole, you know, it just creates momentum, excitement, and it just pushes, you know, the team on, I think, because it translates into the stands and then translates onto the pitch. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see how that goes. So, Brady, you're off to watch wrestling at the cinema, aren't you? So what we'll do is we'll draft someone else in very quickly to discuss the press conference and interview, and then we'll pick up the story from there. Cozzy, what's your favourite away day?
Matt, it's got to be the City Ground at Nottingham. Just old school stadium, you're right near the pitch, great atmosphere. But there's nothing like playing at home. Same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app.
At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. And just like that, Brady's gone wrestling and he's been replaced by a tag team of Killer Kozłowski, as we have Ian Kilroy and Richard Kosmala. Lads, I'm sold. We're looking back on the first interview and the first press conference from Andre Brighton Writer, and there was a lot to like. Very good. You know, I think the first thing that kind of stuck out was his English is really good, you know, really good. There was a manager I recommended just on the podcast, Stefan Baumgart, and the feeling was that he didn't really speak good English. No such worry with Andrea Brighton, right? And I remember when David Wagner came over and he said he wasn't very good at English though, didn't he? And he could speak more than any of us, you know, he knew more English than all of us. So I think that was the first thing that popped out. Not that we should be surprised because the Germans are usually good at that. And then the other thing was really sort of, he's been around the place or he's been here before in 2015 and spent a day with David Wagner. And then had a night out with Elias Kachunga and Michael Heffley. I bet that was something. But really good first impression. And you know what they say about first impressions? They last forever, don't they? Cozzy, you were there viciously scribbling notes down like a balding journo. What did you make of the first interview and the first presser?
Well, this is the guy who thought Darren Moore were a coup. So let's be honest, I don't know if I said it on the pod live, but I definitely put it in our internal communications channel. So take everything I say with a pinch of salt.
I could definitely put you back in your box on that one.
Yeah, what happened to Darren Moore? He's doing well at Port Vale, isn't it? Anyway, moving on to the subject hand. Fantastic. I'm easily pleased though, Matt, to be fair to me. And you know how much I love my continental football, and German football's really been kind of a real love of mine since I went to my first visit to Schalke. And just kind of let us experience that culture of it. And I've absolutely loved it. And not obviously, you know, the Wagner, you know, revolution, as it was called at the time, that was obviously, you know, amazing for us. And then the Sievert thing, but I've kind of carried on my love since then, been to a lot of these grounds. He was at Hanover, and when I went to Cologne a few weeks ago, that was, you had to change it Hanover to, I was going to, Wolfsburg, and Hanover were playing in that lunchtime, and it was incredible, like the amount of people that were going to their game. And so the big thing for me, kind of with a little tiny bit of knowledge for German football, is a lot of these clubs that he's been at has been like, you know, big deals. I think that's the thing when you talk about Schalke, obviously they've kind of become my team because Wagner, and I've been there quite a few times now, but this is a club that gets like 62,000 fans for a Division 2 game. They're in turmoil, but obviously people remember it from the glory days, Raul, Leroy Sané, and, you know, that when Brighton Wright was there, obviously he was bombed out when they was in the fifth spot, and which is quite incredible now when you think they're like, I think they're like fifth bottom from Bundesliga 2, but for people that don't know German football, or maybe not, maybe just know Dortmund or Bayern or even Leverkusen this year, it's like Schalke are massive news. And
Schalke are a beast, aren't they?
They are. And for him to do that, I mean, it could be like you had your Darren Moore argument, Matt, because they obviously had a good team then. And you know, but they wanted fourth place. It wasn't enough. They got a new director of football, enough he went. But only, you know, the people that, you know, I've kind of know that from Schalke, like, they were really impressed with him as well. And then obviously his time at Paderborn, it's hard to, you've got to realize how small they are, and what he did there was an absolute miracle. And there was a real theme obviously in these two, there's certainly the press conference today in that as well. It feels like to me he's being brought in to not just keep us up, which is obviously the job remit we chatted about a few times. I thought it was a difficult one this week. We want a guy who's keeping us up, and then a guy who wants us to dream big and take us into the Premier League with his obviously 3-year plan. But I think what was brilliant today, Matt, is that this guy, were like, I mean, obviously he's going to say it, and I know he kept reiterating it might be a bit daft, you know, to even think about the Premier League at this stage, but he wanted to be there as quick as possible, and it was just music to my ears, mate. He was really calm and composed. I really liked, you know, what you mentioned on the Sunday on the podcast and that as well, with the guy who you got a bit of info from. He was saying that he's not like your total Warnock character, and he's not most exciting, but I always thought anyone who would have in a competitive Adam Moore would come across better. But I just like his calmness. I just like the fact that I know he's 50-year-old, and obviously his CV speaks for his experience, but I just love the fact he kept saying that, you know, which what we knew, he'd turned down a lot of clubs. And part of me wonders, obviously, I think we heard about it with Kosovo and Besiktas, but part of me wonders if there are even more than that. So he was obviously in demand, and I like the bit that Andy Brassel, I think, was said on Second Tier Pod as well, that little soundbite where this is a guy who knows his onions, like, with, you know, German football. And he just kept mentioning exciting football, exciting times and high press. But obviously we're going through it a bit more detail, but it just felt good, Matt. It just felt we're in good hands. And but when you assess it, if this were someone coming in August, it's like, wow, this is exciting. Or also maybe even like June or something, so you think he's got the window to get us going. The only thing, obviously, you're thinking, Jesus Christ, mate, you've got to, like, win us four games, get two draws, you've got to keep us up. But I just get a feeling of calm with this guy, and the fact he kept linking Worthy's kind of work into it and that as well, almost felt like he's just going to try and continue that. And he kept mentioning that it'd be stupid for him to come, you know, for me to come in and just to totally change everything that's been gone. But so again, I mentioned it before, but on the tweet I put the other, but I don't think you can. If it had come in straight after Moore, I think it's a difficult job. But the work Worthy's done, you could play this back in May, we've been relegated, but I can't emphasize enough the four games that Worthy's done. It's almost like he's created the culture that Andre wants to continue. So to me, it'll just be a little bit of tweaking rather than a major overhaul, which if he'd have followed Moore, I think we would have to done. So, but just kind of buzzing. And again, I'm thinking, like, do we get down to Watford on Saturday? And while nothing's guaranteed in football and he's got to keep us up, it just felt that he's taking everything in his stride. And obviously, I let Killer come in now. I've got a few more other points that I wrote down. But yeah, just I was just trying to rein it in a little bit, thinking, but it was always going to be an easy sell for me because I'm really into German football. I like the German culture. You mentioned your mate, Mr. Boom. I don't think he's going to be wearing any flat caps and, you know, be doing that. But just little things like we saw them pictures with the Stone Island and stuff. I just think he's someone, if he gets it going, and what a first game. And I loved it how he won't be pushed on the Leeds game. And classic playing, he's always been England too much, hasn't he, already, saying it's Watford away. He didn't really want to mention Leeds again. So mate, he's clever and he's done all his homework. Yeah, bring us back in later on, Matt. I'll let Kyle have a go. But so much to be positive and excited about from this guy. When you look at it, it's an unknown punt, really, when all said and done with his experience in English football.
Can you remember the last manager who used to wear Stone Island out and about quite a lot?
What other
David Wagner. Yeah, David Wagner.
The so Germans, they're mad. They're just mad at touchline. Watch any of the games. It's you don't get many tracksuits, mate.
No, David Wagner turned up to the what's the club called again? The bus that used to go on Causey, the Millbridge. So David Wagner turned up with that on. But fun. Fun times. Killer. I thought what was quite good was, Cozzy touched on it there as well, that he said that it'd be silly to come in and change everything quickly. And what they've done is they've realised the need for some form of continuity. And when he's announced his backroom team, you've got Thomas Kleiner there. The other chap whose name just escapes me right at the moment. Asif Saric.
I've got it written down, Matt. Asif Saric.
And so he mentions those two, and what he says there is, you need people around you who know how to get promoted. And I thought that was good.
We've heard that before, Matt.
Yeah, exactly. And the way he said it was just very matter of fact, wasn't it? Like, it wasn't like a distant thing in the future that was probably not achievable. It was like, yeah, this is what we need to get promoted. And it was just very matter of fact. And they've also kept Kevin Russell as well, which I thought was good, because he's the continuity link, isn't he, between what Johnny Worthington set up to now. And he spoke quite highly of that. And we've brought a new goalkeeper coach in, haven't we? Is it, how do you say his surname? Is it Kwai Ki?
That's what they went with on the presser, yeah.
Yeah, Lob Over the River Kwai. That's a future pod cast title, isn't it? But tell us what you thought, mate, because there's, like I say, Cozzy's buzzing with it. I'm pretty buzzing with it. I think the whole town fan base are. Are you going to go up or down with this? You're
going
to go up,
aren't you? I'm going up all the way up here. No, look, I think my worry with it was that when he first came in on paper, I can't remember a coach. We spoke about this on the last podcast. There's never been a coach that's come to Huddersfield with the CV that he's got, or not in modern history. Maybe it happened in the Middle Ages. I'm sure Lee Morris might have written about it once upon a time, but I can't remember somebody coming in with such a good CV. So to me, I had a little bit of a worry, apart from Neil Warnock, but he was
75, wasn't he?
Has he ever won a title in the top division of anywhere in the world? I don't think he has.
Well, no. He's maybe won the conference.
No, maybe that counts, but maybe Aberdeen manage it from where they are now.
Yeah,
but
that'd be amazing. Like,
on paper, it's great. So I was really intrigued to listen to him to see if it was a money motivated move. And now, obviously, that's always going to be in play when it comes to bringing in a big manager. It matters, of course it does. But straight away, as soon as he spoke, I fell in love with him. It's like getting blown away by somebody you walk past and think, oh, do you know what? They're quite nice. All of a sudden, it's like he just changed everything. And he speaks with such common sense. And this is quite rare for us, having seen Darren Moore recently, who was quite the opposite of it. And okay, Neil Warnock was the same, but it's just David Wagner vibes, isn't it, straight away? And I know it's a lazy comparison because they're both German. But like talking about having a team full of leaders and have won before, that was a David Wagner thing. And I don't think it was a throwback to David Wagner football. I think it's just he has a similar philosophy and it just happened to be that way. And I couldn't be more in on that. I thought the first interview he did with DTS was good, but it's a little bit more sanitised when it's a town-produced thing. And his presser today with all the questions from the journalists, I thought was really, really good. But like you, Matt, I really enjoyed the way he's explaining about the kind of football he wants to play. And it does sound like Worthington football or Kevin Russell football. Maybe he had more of a impetus in the style of football that we play than's been let on. I wasn't entirely sure whether Kevin Russell's only here for 3 or 4 weeks, though. He did mention that his English is a bit limited at the moment And for the next 2-3 weeks, the training sessions, Kevin Russell's going to be a great help. So I'm not entirely sure if he's a long-term assistant manager.
I think he
or
might
not.
Have mentioned it might be to the end of the season, didn't he? And then we'll see. I think he saw.
Again, though, that's clever. You've got your own ideology. You've got the way you want to play with your guys. You're the coach. You're ultimately the face of it. And if it goes wrong, you're responsible. So of course you want your own guys in. But the clever thing to do is keep the guys in that have worked for the last 4 games and see if you can learn from them. And now there are some coaches that are egotistical in a way that they wouldn't want that. When Darren Moore came in, he changed the way we played from Neil Warnock more or less straight away. And now it doesn't feel like from what was said today, that's going to happen. And okay, the results have been pretty good recently, so that makes more sense than maybe it would have been if Moore had done it, because Warnock's end of his tenure wasn't great. But it's just that, Matt. It's just that we want to press high. We want to keep possession, he said. We want to work from the back, but we can't do that now. He also said something that we've been picking up on the podcast recently, in that we've been pressing for 90 minutes under Johnny Worthington and we're running out of steam and we can't do it today. What's he say, Andre? Straight away, we can't press for 90 minutes. And now to me, that's common sense. You can see that that's happening. You can see we're letting in late goals and we can't press for the entire time. He said he wants to do that in future, but for now, we just can't do it. So we won't be doing it. We're going to look at these next 14 games, get to the end of the season, and then he'll start rebuilding in the way he wants a team to play. And I know it sounds really straightforward and it should always be like that, but how many managers have we had, and do you see in the league, that don't play that way, that they just want to do it their way from day one because it's their team now? And now, maybe it is a German model. Maybe German coaches take it this way, but it just says more than anything else. It really does to me. And it also says more about Kevin Nagel's desire for the club. I don't think this is going to be a cheap appointment. If you look at the clubs he's picked before, Brighton Wright has always picked very, very well. He's looked at clubs that have room to improve and that he feels like he can do it. And that's why I'm guessing he's turned down jobs. We've got a guy now that I don't know if he approached us or his team approached us, but that's how it was phrased within the press conferences today and yesterday. That Mark Cartwright said he was brought to us. He said no to jobs that aren't right for him. And he was very clear that he thinks this is the right job for us from following the conversations he's had with the club. So just as a fan, I'm getting excited about that, thinking he's not going to come here if he doesn't think he can take the club forward. And now taking the club forward in the Championship requires financial investment. Kevin went out in January and did that really, didn't he? He did more than I think most of us could have expected. And now we've got a really good top, he's in the top echelon of coaches we could have ever dreamt of. And he must have been promised either the remit he wants with the financial backing so he can get to where he believes he can take us. And I think if you're not excited about that, being a Huddersfield Town fan, nothing will excite you. You just can't, there's nothing else that can do it. We could not have, on the day Darren Moore was sacked, expect to be in such a positive situation following 2 wins from Worthington and another good performance at Southampton. And now a European coach who's won things in different countries, which is another key point. It's not easy to win something in just one league. Of course, it's difficult. But this guy's done it in more than one division, in more than one country, and that is huge. That pattern of success. Sorry, Cosa. That pattern of success is crucial.
The Swiss thing was incredible. If you research that, he just came in. I think they finished eighth in a 10-team league, and then he just won the league the next season. We're not talking someone knocking on the door, just needed to shove a line a la Simon Grayson when he came in with us. This was like just absolutely from nowhere. And, you know, when he got, you know, young boys, Burn, like pretty much win it every year, and obviously saw for Wagner and that as well. That is just so impressive and that as well. And the thing, I don't know if I'm being blown away with this, because maybe this is what happens with interviews, but I know I'm probably get shouted down here. But when Bielsa, I remember when he came to Leeds, he had like a massive he had a massive presentation that he kind of did, and I think it would have been easy for Brighton Wright to come in and like look at my CV, you know, boom. But the thing is, he brought in a document on strengths, weaknesses, that things that were going wrong. And I know he could think, well, yeah, he's going for an interview, so he should do that as well. But no, he could have just sat there and just like, there's my CV. Yeah. You know, you want me because, and I think that's pretty incredible, really.
That was my fear, Cozzy. That was my fear, Cozzy. That was exactly what I was worried about, that he was going to come in, big man on campus. Oh, I've done everything everywhere, me. And now you're lucky to have me. And straight away, like you said, Cozzy, when that's happened, you're thinking, he's a different guy. He's exactly the kind of guy as Yorkshire people and Huddersfield Town fans that we love to follow. And it instantly put my mind at rest. It took him about 60 seconds because straight away, the tone in which he speaks and how favourably he speaks of people he's worked with, the clubs he's been at, doesn't speak poorly of more or less anyone. It just came across refreshingly honest and humble. And we've heard that word before by certain chairmen in our time.
I think the thing as well that he emphasised a lot, which I was really blown away, and he'll get the fans on side as well, Huddersfield, he's got history with Huddersfield before. So part of me, when you first stayed it, you think, yeah, whatever, mate, and that as well. And then obviously mentioned the dinner that he went with Kachunga and Effley, and, you know, it's like, because he said he spent one day in the town, but he's always kept an eye on it. And, you know, I think you know when people are blagging you on that as well, especially like foreign coaches, because let's be honest, we're not a massive name, but the fact that he's kind of kept tabs on us and knew, and the one thing that, He didn't really lose any kind of his temper in the interview, but I think it was Chris Dawkes that asked him at the end. Says, "Is it a risk for you?" Or was it Chris Dunleavy? I can't remember who'd done it, but
no, it was Chris. I think it was Dawkes. Yeah.
Chris Dawkes. But I don't know. He snapped at him, but he looked him in the eye, didn't he? Give a stern reply. Says, "Why should it be a risk for me? I'm a positive man." You know what I mean? It's like I can get what Chris Dawkes were like coming from there. Yeah, it's almost like you know. Because obviously a big Leeds fan, I think he was just like getting the derby banter going, hey, a small club, why would someone your CV want to come in, etc. But he kind of reacted, I'm not saying badly to it, but I like that reaction. It was like, why should it be a risk for me? It's almost like he's
Did that remind you of the time David Wagner refused to talk about Liverpool with Sky? Where Sky was sort of saying, why did you turn down Liverpool assistant manager to Jurgen Klopp? And he's just like, why are you here to talk about Liverpool? Yeah, that was sort of similar.
Yeah, I love that, Matt. I love that as well. And a lot of the things as well that were kind of mentioned as against the odds, because obviously we know us, but I mean, obviously Kevin's going to spend a little bit.
Against the odds.
and his promotions have been against the odds. Obviously the Paderborn promotion was against the odds. The Schalke one, you could argue, obviously maybe expectations were a bit higher with the team that they had, but you know, the Zurich thing was against the odds and that as well. And I think the fact, I know we heard it all before, Premier League and God, 3-year plan and stuff, but just mental when they were saying, I want to get there as quickly as possible and things like that as well. It was just so, so good. I just like the fact that he hadn't come in, this is who I am. I've just like, trying to sell the club to sell, you know, this is, I'm Andre Bratt-Rabner, your best candidate. He was just fantastic and just calm as well. And I found him really interesting, Matt. I know that it was interesting what came on the pod on Sunday when they were saying you're not going to get like one-liners like Warnock or whatever, but I found him, maybe it was just first interview or whatever, but I just found it really interesting. And Oggy, again, just like his first question, Oggy's Oggy, innit? But he could have like, why are you here? It was just like, I know there's another way he could have phrased it and that as well, but it was just for this first question by a press person and that as well. It was just, by the end, I think even Oggy were a little bit bought in and that as well. I know, God, he must have interviewed that many managers and been cynical. So it was just a tick. I didn't see a bad thing really there. The only problem is he's got to keep us in the division. It's just a shame it's not July and he's starting from scratch, but we are where we are. And I think that makes the decision even more incredible from him because he's putting his reputation on the line. So I totally get what Chris Dawkes was saying, a risk for me. I think that's what he was trying to say. It's almost like you might have a relegation.
You might go down. Yeah.
Yeah. But he's not seen it that way. And he reacted really, you know, why should it be a risk? Cause like
defiant.
And it was quite interesting as well with the team news as well, because I didn't realize, I thought we were going to have another press conference for Watford, but that were it. But he was like, I thought, oh, don't go Darren Morris, cause he was saying who's fit and stuff. And I know you might think this is just like, wow, you shouldn't be excited this, but he were like reeling off both players who were like, might not be for Jonathan Hogan. It's clear he knows the players already and he's only had two training sessions as well. And it's absolutely, honestly, just as first impressions go, this was just like a fantastic one as well. But it's, and obviously mentioned yesterday in about his family, I think his family is staying over, but they're all coming over for the Leeds game as well. So It's when you think about that, let's be honest, you can imagine us moving to a job and just leaving his family behind. It'd just be like unbelievable. I know the Germans are different because they're kind of Wagner with it, but honestly, that is a sacrifice he's making. And he is just, for Huddersfield Town, who were 20th, 21st in the championship, it's not like we're expected to go up anytime soon. It is, yeah, I'm trying to rein it in, but it was just so good to hear what he was saying. And I can't wait for Saturday. Already,
Killer. I could imagine, Killer, that the opportunity for you to go work abroad with having six kids in that house would be tempting. But you know,
I'm looking for one now. Actually, if there's any jobs available anywhere in Europe, I'm qualified and ready to go.
There we go, mate. Go back to you, Killer, because tactics came up as well, and you were. I think the first time we heard of Andre Bratt-Rabner and the first thing that pops up, you see the articles, etc. And it was all about how he loves 3-5-2 or 3-1-4-2, wasn't it? And you, being a big fan of the back three, kind of grimaced maybe a little bit. But if you listen to something Mark Cartwright said in there, and Cozzy touched on it again, because Cozzy's whizzed through most of that. But he came in with a list of players in different systems, doing different things for different jobs. And he came prepared, like Cozzy says, he came prepared. And I think Mark Cartwright was looking at him like a forlorn lover, wasn't he? Sort of like all glazed over in the eye, like Clivins with Wagner. And I think that was one of the things that came out. And Mark Cartwright talked about Huddersfield identity as well. That's something we mentioned on the podcast before, where we've not been sure exactly what they're trying to do, you know, in terms of recruitment. What are we recruiting for? What are we trying to do? How are we trying to play? But these things are now starting to clear up, and that was great to see from Mark Cartwright, that we're starting to think of the identity of how we're going to play moving forward and how it's going to drift through to the academy and bring them through that way. And that's something they did do when David Wagner was here as well. David Wagner put something together for because I attended a seminar that he did and what things to look for in different players in different positions and how they would come through the system, which was really good. And it looks like the club are going to go back to that, which is good. So tactically, it might not be the 3-1-4-2 killer, and we might go with a back four, and you might have a big smile on your face as we go 4-3-3 and flying from midfield.
I'm smiling like Mark Cartwright right now. That's the thing. I honestly, regardless of my opinion on it, I don't think the team that we have in the division that we're in, it works. That's kind of where it comes from. And it's so refreshing to hear him that he's got so many different systems and he brought it to the club. I can't believe that that's not a common thing, though. I actually thought most managers going for a job would have that available to them, but it seems to be quite a different thing. But it feels like it's David Wagner era two, doesn't it? It feels like, right, that worked once, let's go back to that. And I couldn't be more in on it. Like you say, Matt, he's got more than one system, which to me says he's going to look at the teams that we're playing. Do you know, like, some coaches play their own way regardless of who we're facing, no matter what. Some coaches come in and just have, like, the defensive football because we just don't want to lose. It feels like we've got a real tactician who's going to try and adapt to who we're playing against. And now I think, again, if you're a small team in a division trying to overachieve based on the revenues that you've got and the money you can spend on a player, that's exactly what you have to do, because we're a club that can't bring in players that are the complete article. You're going to bring in your Van La Parras that are amazing on the ball but have no end product. You're going to bring in your Radulovic who's bagged so many goals in Finland but then isn't probably right just yet and needs to adapt his game for the English league to be able to score goals at our level. Or you bring in Healy who's injured, been injured quite a bit and he just needs to get used to it. This is what we're going to be working with. And to be able to work with that, you have to be a flexible coach and find different ways of playing. And to me, Brighton Wright sounds like he's that kind of guy. We do need I feel like at the moment, honestly, if you go on Twitter, though, everyone's talking about, oh, we need a football culture. We need a football culture. And it's this keyword thrown about here, there and everywhere. But with a team like us, you definitely need some sort of defined style of play so you can bring in players fit for that system, especially when you go through managers as quickly as professional clubs do now. You need to bring in a guy that is a certain height or a certain size for the type of position in the system that you play. And it really feels like we haven't had that under Darren Moore. We definitely did not have it under Neil Warnock because he were a firefighter. Darren Moore, it just didn't work. Whereas now it feels like for the first time there's a bit more hope, doesn't it? It looks like you say, you're looking for something that might happen in 12, 18 months. It feels like there's a progression and something to aim for. And I couldn't be more excited. But his tactical talk, I thought, was fantastic. And a quick one back to the talking about who was available for Watford. Darren Moore always said nothing, didn't he? I'd like to play a game, but he didn't like say that. He just kind of inferred that he wasn't going to, and then all of a sudden be playing. Whereas yesterday, Brian Wright has said, "Oh, I'm not going to tell you because I don't want to tell Watford." That's more or less what he said. Exactly. Common sense. Common sense and honest openness.
Yeah. Totally said, killer. And we said it before about Darren Moore, but it so frustrated me. You're almost like trying to come across as a Mourinho kind of clever guy, and he just like makes everything so complicated and just turn people off on that as well. And it makes me excited for more of his press conference as well. And another couple of things that I picked up on that as well, I like the fact where he said all staff. You know, it's not a one-man show, was his words, not a one-man show, which I just think if I'm working there, you know, it's just like, it's brilliant. It's like we've all, I know it's an obvious thing to say, but we've all got a part to play. And I can't believe that, you know, the staff out there that I think there's going to be a bit of an aura in there against him, with him and that as well, almost like, wow, this guy is, you know, he's, like you say, I've never known, like you said, someone have a CV as good as his as well. And I know we've kind of maybe can count against, because obviously we've drawn so many games, but he says we've got to be hard to beat. So I think the best thing about the last four games is, yeah, we lost on Saturday late on, and you could have argued, you know, maybe we should have, you know, like you said, picked up on not run back with the ball at the halfway line. But the last four games, the opposition have found it difficult against Huddersfield Town. And we haven't had that. Even though we've drawn all them other games, I don't think you speak to opposition managers, they're thinking they're going to get an hard game, where now it's like, Worthy, I can't emphasise enough what Worthy start is almost like, I think he's just going to be, he's going to make it a lot easier for Andre to carry on as well. And I know we're mentioning as well that you don't like us being down there. I watched that Nagel diary that you guys mentioned on Sunday, and it just feels like, I know you could, well, hang on a minute, you put Darren Moore, Kevin, but obviously he's learned the hard way and compensation way as well, where he's paid off. But I just, it was almost like, feel we've got that man. And another thing as well, Mark Carter, normally when you get a foreign manager and you have a director of football or someone there, it's almost like, because they might misinterpret something or to put him right, he hardly spoke to Mark Cartwright. And some people might think that's a good thing, but I just looked on that thing, there were no need for him to speak, because basically this guy who's been in our building like 2 weeks or whatever it is, just would sing him from the same hymn sheet. And sometimes when we've had DTS, I've sometimes been a bit critical of him. It's almost like he's there just in case he doesn't say anything controversial or, you know, put something right and that as well. But there was no need for, obviously, Mark Cartwright to be there. And it was, when I looked at it, I were expecting a press conference today when I loaded my YouTube up of about 1 hour 30, and it were 47 minutes, probably 44 once that advert goes off and what have you. So I think it would just, like you say, clarity, calm, in the plan.
Clarity.
And a long time since we've had that. But that's all well and good if this is June, July, but bloody hell, he's got to get some results. But honestly, I just can't. I said that on that tweet last week. People can look at it differently, but Leeds and West Brom, with the form they're in, two home games, I think this would be a good thing. I could be totally wrong here when you know, Somerville's slotting in his hat trick and that as well next week, but I think these are good home games. I really do. Rather than having Rotherham and, I don't know, someone else kind of first up, Swansea or something like that, I just think the building's going to be rocking. You know, Andre's going to be there. I just think it'll be a little bit of tweaking. I think the fact he'll be there, you know, just the dugout, you know, with his arms folded. I just think, let's be honest, you ask Corbyn and Fark, I know they'll say, well, it's about what we do that counts, the old Brian Orton phrase. But I think, bloody hell, our game's a lot harder now from our appointment. And honestly, it's you're dancing with the devil, aren't you, with Town, like we are in this relegation battle. But I just think, yeah, I'm excited, because if we stay up, which we hope we do, and fingers crossed, I think we will, but then the summer's going to be so exciting for us, because I'm not saying, right, we're going to aim for the Premier League, but there's a guy with a plan, and, you know, it's everyone's going to be get a chance straight away, but he'll quickly figure stuff out, and he'll be thinking, well, he's surplus to requirements. I just think we're in for a good, well, it's been pretty dull, and we're just kind of staying up and crawling, and the club itself, we've got an owner who's ambitious, we've got a coach, CV speaks for itself. I just think we've got the fans, hopefully, honestly, God, this could be played back, but imagine if we beat Leeds. To bring people back from that moon, it would be difficult, but I just think these are good games to have, and Carlos will probably get a bit of jip from the crowd and that as well when he comes back with West Brom, and, you know, not from me, but it's like, again, we will be well up for it in that game. And no, honestly, March is going to be such an exciting month, but as Andre will tell you, we've got a game in February still.
Tell you what, there's nothing more ambitious than me saying I'll invite Cosy onto the podcast and it'll last 15 minutes. So I think that's the most ambitious.
Double it. Say today. Double it.
Right, I think we'll start to wrap up things, but I think the last point of call is that Brady put out a poll which said, Andre Brighton Writer is the new head coach of Huddersfield Town. HTFC fans, what do you make of this appointment? Give us your reasoning as well. Are you happy, not happy, not sure, and other? So, 80.9% said they were happy with it. Not happy, 0.9%. Which is amazing from our fan base, isn't it? Not sure.
Some family that
Alan Nixon. Not sure. Not sure.
Absolutely hammered in that video diary. Sorry, Matt, but I couldn't Nagel. He was dying to say it, whether it was Dave Carmichael. What they were like, he was going to say his name, wasn't it?
It's about time someone stuck it to Nixon. But anyway, not sure was 17.3%, which I get, that's fine. And other was 0.9%. So literally one person said not happy. So I think we can live with that. That one person was not Lee Morris, because he's put in the comments, looks good on paper, but every appointment is a gamble and we don't really know until we hear what his philosophy is. We see what his team plays like. But from looking at his record, it's certainly more inspiring than the last bloke. I don't think Lee liked Darren Moore. I never really got that vibe though. Andy Firth says, track record is good, but a very unknown quantity. Proof will be how we do under him. Martin Sykes says, excited, but prepared for disappointment. Come on, Martin. Town fans will make up their minds over about 2 or 3 weeks, and most invariably correct recently. Nick Hood says, exciting, if as good as Wagner. Are you doing a pod on it? Yes, Nick, here we are. Terry Dave says, other, no idea who he is or really knows who he is to listen to Believe rather than normal watch every game from every league in the world Twitter. So I think Dave's just been realistic, sort of saying, never heard of him, so I'm not sure, which I think is the vibe from that 17%, which is good. Marco4J says, I'm happy enough. It's brought an end to the saga and he looks to have decent credentials. The proof of the pudding will be in the staying above Wednesday QPR and Rotherham, though. I don't think that's the saying, is it? But never mind. Mark Knoll says, I love the high tempo press that gets you out of your seat. Tippy tappy bores me to tears. Well, I mean, under Wagner, we had the high press, but we also passed it around a bit, didn't we? Quite slowly at times.
Well, we're hard to beat though, Matt, weren't we, under Wagner? And I think he's obviously reiterated that today. Yeah, that's the thing. We've been too easy beats, and that's been the best thing with the Worthy era. But, you know, long it'd be brilliant, because you knew we were going to get in our game against Huddersfield them times, and we've been for so many seasons, it's easy wins, but not anymore, obviously, what Andre's saying.
Paul Hitchinson says, gegenpressing and full throttle football is back at the John Smiths. I can't wait to see what this guy does with Town. Good times ahead. If he can replicate what Wagner did for us, I can't wait. Up the Town. Wiggles FT says, it's exciting when you look at what he achieved previously, but I won't get my hopes up just yet. His first test is keeping this run of form going. If he changes too much too soon, we could be in real trouble. And obviously, we had that question answered today where he said he wasn't going to do that, which is great.
Matt, how do you think we'll approach the Leeds game, or is that for another pod? Because
it's for another pod. We got Watford first. What did Brian Wright say? Watford first.
Andre. I've been Andre'd.
Juan Lerva says, time will tell. Listening to Talk Twaddle today. I mean, that's how we're sponsored by them now, aren't we? We're part of the network, so I can't have that, Juan Lerva. And Darren was on waxing about how they had to stabilise the club despite a horrendous injury list. Yeah, I'm not sure about Darren's claims there either. Andrew Allen says, great appointment, better than Duff, who I wasn't convinced by, shows our intent. Guy Bradley says his CV is impressive. He looks like he has a good personality, and it's not just another from the manager merry-go-round. Connor Statey says, gets judged after 5 games in charge. Simple as that. I think that's fair enough. One good, 3 bad says, much better than the usual suspects. Risk and reward. Hope he can pull it off. Chris Rowan says, happy, as he wanted them to go after a defined target or someone different, rather than the usual suspects in the dross list / merry-go-round. If we couldn't attract a proven top-class manager with EFL Premier League experience, then by default, someone like this is the next best go-to option. Jennifer Lomas says, I'm happy. Andy Moore says, feels like another attempt to replicate the past, but he does look a solid manager. Let's hope he has a personality that fits with our club. Excited to see our next journey unfold. Aaron Belgrave says, when's the next pod? Here it is, Aaron. Ned Zeppelin, what a name. Ned Zeppelin says, reasoning, because he's not Nathan Jones or Steve Cooper. To be honest, I'm quite stoked by this appointment. It has a Wagner feel about it. I'm going to have to see. He's saying stoked. He must be Australian. Killer will confirm. And the last couple there, Jimmy Flynn says, other, every appointment is a roll of the dice. If Werther gets a win this weekend, then the bar has been set very high. If the results performances aren't good straight away, then I can see people turning very fast. That was done on the 16th, so we did actually lose against Hull, although the 2-1 defeat against Hull isn't actually looking that bad after they turned over Southampton by the same scoreline a couple of days later, so maybe it's not that bad. Miles Dixon says, applaud the club for doing something different. Think Nagel has learned his lesson with more. British lower league merry-go-round managers just don't go down well with the Town fan base. And finally, DTPLC says, I'd have preferred to be safe before taking the gamble, untested in the EFL, and there's no time to instill his ideas or get to know the players or their strengths, weaknesses. and it's a massively pressurised situation.
He ain't Matt, but he's an experienced coach. I think that's some of them points for me missing the point. He's an experienced coach. He's not a Seaver who's just kind of just come in, and I know kind of Wagner had come in like from the, you know, the B or the, you know, the model, but this guy's experienced though, and I get championship different, but he's not, no Morgan. He won't put his reputation on the line, and obviously I'm talking him up like he's an agent, but I just, you know, he's never managed in this and that. He's not daft, and it's just can't wait. I can't wait for the games to begin, and it's March is a mad month, isn't it? We've got games week, Tuesday, Saturday, but yeah, just here we go, innit? It's what a seal.
Here we go indeed. I think the takeaway from this is that the appointment definitely has the seal of approval from the fan base, including us, and the ones who voted. So, you know, hats off to Mr. Nagel and co. It looks an exciting appointment. And I think we'll call it there for now, because this has gone way over because of Cozzy. And what we'll do is we'll be back with a main pod at the end of the week. So thanks, everyone. Thanks for everyone who's commented. Thanks to Matt Meadows, Craig King, and everybody who's offered their insight. Guys, thank you. And we'll be back soon.
There's a team that is dear to its followers. The colours are bright blue and white. They're a team of renown. They're the pride of the town. And the game of football is their delight. And all the while, upon the field of play, thousands loudly cheer them on the way. Often you can hear them say, who can beat the town today? And then the bells will ring so merrily, and every goal shall be a memory. So town, play up and bring that cup back to Huddersfield. So town, play up and bring the cup back to Huddersfield.
Lads, what's your favourite 90th minute goal?
Got to be Heffley against Leeds. A shot from Moy and sliding in at the death, Michael Heffley. Great finish to the game. Shared with my family, only made better by ordering McDonald's via McDelivery afterwards. 3 points, McNugget share box, spot on. Order McDelivery now by the McDonald's app. You in.
At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.